bees. And also his departure or his disappearance from this world is so great that just by understanding that everything that Krishna does in this regard is divyam or transcendental, then tattva deha puna janma naiti, that one does not have to take his birth again within this material world. How powerful are the pastimes of Krishna? But they are actually very difficult to understand. Why? Because there is such a striking parallel between the pastimes of Krishna and the activities of human beings that one certainly tends to mistake Krishna's pastimes as ordinary, as the activities of an ordinary person. But yet, in each of Krishna's pastimes, although some of them may have elements that are quite parallel to activities that a human can perform, nevertheless, they always have elements which are so far beyond anything imaginable, practically speaking, that a human being can do. So Krishna, for example, he married. So many people marry. But when Krishna married, he married 16,108 wives. Now that, no one in history has ever done that. What to speak of having a palace for each and every one of them? And what to speak of marrying them each within their separate palaces all at the same time? Elements like that are certainly astounding. Or Krishna, when just a young boy lifting Govardhan Hill to protect the residents of Vrindavan from the flood of rain from Maharaj Indra. Or Krishna dancing with the gopis in the middle of night, but being situated between each and every gopi, even though there were thousands of them. So much so that each girl thought that Krishna was dancing only with her. And Krishna killing one demon after another demon with the cowherd boys. But yet, Krishna was playing with the boys, tending the cows, walking around in the fields without shoes, playing a buffalo horn, his flute, putting the feathers and minerals of the earth on his body, playing, decorating himself, playing games like an ordinary boy, but yet completely transcendental, the all-attractive Supreme Personality of Godhead. Having pleasure, dealing, associating, playing, engaging in intimate activities with his dear devotees. That is actually what's going on in Krishna's Leela. He's engaging in very, very sweet, loving exchanges with his dearest devotees. So Krishna's activities, Krishna's karma, janma karma, chame divyam, and his birth, the unborn has taken birth. Is that possible? Of course. How could someone unborn be born? It is completely antithetical. It can't happen. It's contradictory. Because if he's born, then he's not unborn. But yet, Krishna, the unborn, acts sambhavam yapma mayaya. By his own energy, by his own mercy, he comes to this world and imitates the birth activities of an ordinary person to attract the love of his devotees who wish to love him in a mood of parent. Because they wish to love him in that way, Krishna acts as if he was born, although he is unborn. And actually he does become, practically speaking, born. And we heard in the 11th chapter how Krishna became the husband of so many wives in Dwarka. Not because he had need for so many wives, because by the very nature, by the very definition of Krishna, he is self-satisfied. There is nothing external to him. What to speak of something external that he needs? There's nothing external to him. But yet, out of his desire to reciprocate the love of his devotees who wish to love him in that mood, sambandhatmika, as queens, mahishi, therefore he becomes the most perfect of kings so they can be queens. And his dealings are so expertly done that their hearts are always bobbing and surfacing and swimming within the ocean of ecstasy, ecstatic love for Krishna because of the wonderful ways that Krishna deals, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, out of the pastimes of Krishna that are difficult to understand, the birth, some of the activities of Krishna, but his disappearance, which this chapter that we will now discuss, chapter 14, it deals with, this is very difficult to understand. How is it that God dies? Is that possible? What would happen if God dies? Even though there was a famous Western philosopher, Nietzsche, God is dead. But by definition, he can't, he can never, ever, ever die, because his very body is composed of existence, bliss, and knowledge. But, as in a drama, sometimes the hero, he acts in a drama, as if he has died. But then when the curtain closes, he goes on with something else. So Krishna performs what's called as a Amosya Lila, or his disappearance pastimes, where he leaves this world to go to another world, where he performs pastimes for the pleasure of his devotees again. So this chapter doesn't directly discuss the disappearance pastime of Krishna, but it discusses some of the aftermath of that. In the 11th canto, in the final two chapters, and some of the opening chapters of the 11th canto, the events leading to Krishna's disappearance are discussed. It's actually a wonderful pastime that Prabhupada explains in the first canto that devotees don't get pleasure in discussing, but it carries with it a sweetness that has a very somber sweetness. Somber because Krishna leaves this world, and sweet because everything that Krishna does is done in such a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful and heroic and unique way. And remembering what is actually going on, that when Krishna leaves this world, he is going to Goloka Vrindavan. Of course, he is always in Goloka Vrindavan, but he is opening up pastimes in another world, another universe. This is very wonderful, and we get a glimpse through these pastimes, which are compared to the sun. When the sun sets in this world, only the smallest and naivest of children think, oh, the sun is gone. And we say the sun is gone, but actually the sun is not gone. The setting of the sun means that the sun is still blazing somewhere else. But the sun is not, at this point, available for our limited vision. That is what it means when the sun sets. And that is what it means when Krishna disappears from this world and performs his leaving this world pastimes. And interestingly enough, when Krishna leaves this world, although his body, ajopi sam avayama bhutanam isvaropi sam prakritistam adishtaya sambhavam yapamaya, although Krishna comes by his spiritual potency, comes to this world, not controlled by the modes of material nature, as we are controlled by the forces of the material world. We are forced to be born, we did not choose, we are forced, our body is forced to grow, we are forced to like this, we are forced to dislike that, we are forced, so many miserable, happy and mixed conditions are forced upon us. But Krishna has nothing like that. So when Krishna leaves this world, his transcendental body moves on. And we'll hear something about this very soon. But he leaves behind his visvarup, his universal form. Because the universal form of Krishna is how Krishna pervades and is situated within everything within this universe. So it is a material form. Subtly material, but it is material. Even though it is his form, it is not his form in the sense that all of Krishna's forms are spiritual. So it is his form in the sense that it is his form manifested in matter, but it is not his form in the sense that it is not his form because his forms are always eternal, spiritual. So Krishna leaves behind the visvarupa which is in the material world anyway, so that the living entities who are not qualified to understand Krishna's disappearance pastimes, who have not heard them properly, who don't have the prerequisite of faith and devotion, that they will become bewildered. This is something that's very wonderful. Because again, these pastimes are very esoteric. One has to be deep to actually understand them, and fortunate. So anyway, what happened? We'll describe a little and possibly read a little of what happened when Krishna decided to leave this world, because Krishna had a mission. Puritranaya sadunam vinasaya chitaskridam dharma sanstapanataya, to reestablish the principles of religion, to protect the devotees, to annihilate the demonic forces. So Krishna had actually performed his mission. And the demigods came to Dwarka and told Krishna, your time, we have begged you to come to this world to do something, and now you have accomplished your mission. Now the time is over. If you like, you can leave. So after that, some inauspicious signs began to appear in Dwarka. And Krishna had already made some prior arrangements that the Yadu dynasty would be cursed. This is described in the beginning of the first chapter of the 11th canto. And Uddhava came to Krishna, understanding that it was time for Krishna to depart from this world. His heart was breaking because he did not want to stay without Krishna. He was such a deep devotee. But Krishna, instead of agreeing to take Uddhava with him, instructed him, which is the majority, vast majority of the 11th canto, instructed him on the process of spiritual life, and then sent Uddhava to Badrikashram. Because one of the reasons was because he did not want Uddhava to see his disappearance pastime. But yet, by his arrangement also, Uddhava more or less did see it. Then, just after Uddhava left for Badrika Ashram, very inauspicious signs began to appear at Dwarka and Dwarka. So Krishna called all the senior members of the Yadu dynasty together, King Ugrasena, and said, look at these signs. We must do something to counteract this inauspiciousness. So we should go to Prabhachetra and perform auspicious rituals that will remove the bad. But actually speaking, the bad could not be removed because it was there by Krishna's arrangement. And when Krishna wants something to happen, ultimately it is not bad despite of how it appears. And it is immovable. His will, his Ichcha Shakti is unstoppable. So Krishna and the residents, the men folk, most of them, the demigods actually, of who were a part of Krishna's pastimes, went to Prabhachetra. And we won't tell the story in detail, but they performed their auspicious ceremonies and then they began to drink an alcoholic beverage made out of rice, fermented rice, and they became intoxicated. And when people become intoxicated, from that comes anger. Very often, anger, and they began to push each other, insult each other, and they began to beat each other with the cursed cane, which was on the shore of Prabhachetra from the curse of the sages, which had become as hard as iron, and they began to kill each other. And in this way, Krishna was preparing for his departure by sending his family members back before him. And then, amazingly enough, the members of the Yadu dynasty began to attack Krishna and Balaram. And Balaram became angry. And don't get Balaram angry. Because Balaram, when he gets angry, because he's an antishesha, and his business is to destroy the universe. So he, with Krishna, and there's actually an amazing painting of this in the Bhagavatam of Krishna and Balaram with the cane, and they are killing the members of the Yadu dynasty. And when there was not one left at Prabhachetra, Balaram sat down by the ocean and left this world. And then Krishna sat down by a young peepal tree. And at that time, Uddhava came back. And the sage Maitreya came. And this is described in the third canto. We won't describe it in detail now. And then, after instructing Uddhava and giving him some last words, he sent him again to Badrika Ashram along with Maitreya. And Krishna then prepared to leave the world also. The demigods came just prior to Krishna's leaving, and they waited in the sky in many, many airplanes. The sky actually became crowded with the airplanes of the demigods who are hoping to take Krishna to their planets on his way back to the spiritual world. They were hoping that he would stop at their place. And it describes in Srila Sridhar Swami describes in his commentary how at that time, just before he left this world, Krishna closed his eyes because he wanted to avoid all the social obligations. And just before that, Krishna called for his eternal chariot to appear. and Daruka, his servant and chariot driver, was wandering around in Prabhachetra, and he smelled the fragrance of the tulsi from Krishna's lotus feet, and he followed that fragrance to where Krishna was, and he saw Krishna was about to depart from this world. And he became mad. Krishna told him to take this chariot and go to Dwarka. And then you tell everyone, because Daruka had seen the carnage of what had happened to the Yadu dynasty, how everyone was killed. You tell everyone who remained in Dwarka what had happened. And then tell Arjuna, you tell my father and mother, Vasudev, Devaki, Rohini, tell them what has happened and take all my wives and bring them, and tell Arjuna to bring them safely to Hastinapur and care for them. You do this. So Daruka, what could he do? The Lord was ordering. So he did it. He left on a chariot for Dwarka. Just then, a hunter came who had made an arrow. His name was Jara, and actually, as described by one of our acharyas, he was actually Bhrigu Muni, who had to take birth as a hunter for having placed his brahminical foot upon the chest of the Lord in a pastime described in the 10th canto. He was cursed by Lakshmi Devi to become a hunter. And from a distance he saw the lotus foot of the Lord, which was sitting with his, I think it was his left foot, sitting upward. And this was all just like a drama played by Krishna's internal energy. Because what he thought that there would be, he was following a deer, and he thought that that beautiful pinkish lotus foot of the Lord was a deer. And he shot his arrow. But what would a deer be doing amidst all the carnage and everything? This was all Krishna's arrangement. Like a drama. Leela. So he shot the arrow, and it did not enter, did not, could not enter Krishna's lotus foot. But yet, it was the excuse that Krishna wanted to end the drama of his appearance in this world. So the hunter saw what he had done. He had shot the Lord, and he came running and crying and threw himself at the Lord's lotus feet, begging forgiveness. There was no mention of him having to pull out the arrow. There was no arrow in his foot. It's the Lord. So the demigods were there. The hunter, Krishna, sent him back to Godhead. And then he left. We'll read the last few verses. As soon as Lord Sri Krishna left the earth, truth, religion, faithfulness, glory, and beauty immediately followed him. This is one of the questions that the sages of Namasharanya asked. They asked, when religion, after Krishna left, religion and knowledge left this world, where have they gone and taken shelter? And the answer, as we know, is Krishna Sadam Upagate. Krishna, his own Dham, Upagate, to the spiritual world, he went with Dharma Gyanadavi Saha, along with religion and knowledge. Adibi, etc. Here are the other qualities that also left. Kalo Nasta Drishamesha. But in this age of Kali, the people will get light. They will be able to see despite the absence of these qualities, because the sun, Purana Arko Dunodita, the sun of the Srimad Bhagavatam has risen. Just like the when the full moon is about to rise, when the sun goes down on the full moon day, exactly at the time when the sun goes down, the full moon comes up. So similarly, the sun of the Bhagavatam rises when the sun of Krishna sets. So immediately, kettle drums resounded in the heavens and flowers showered from the sky. Most of the demigods and other higher beings led by Brahma could not see Lord Krishna as he was entering his own abode, since he did not reveal his movements. But some of them did catch sight of him and were extremely amazed. Just as ordinary men cannot ascertain the path of a lightning bolt as it leaves a cloud, the demigods could not trace out the movements of Lord Krishna as he returned to his abode. A few of the demigods, however, notably Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva, could ascertain how the Lord's mystic power was working, and thus they became astonished. All the demigods praised the Lord's mystic power and then returned to their own abodes. This pastime is actually so powerful that text 14 says, anyone who regularly rises early in the morning and carefully chants with devotion the glories of Lord Sri Krishna's transcendental disappearance and his return to his own abode will certainly achieve that same supreme destination. As soon as Daruka reached Dwarka, he threw himself at the feet of Vasudeva and Ugrasena and drenched their feet with his tears, lamenting the loss of Lord Krishna. Daruka delivered the account of the total destruction of the Vrishnis, and upon hearing this, O Parikit, the people became deeply distraught in their heart and stunned with sorrow. Feeling the overwhelming pain of separation from Krishna, they struck their own faces while hurrying to the place where their relatives lay dead. They all went to Prabhachatra. When Devaki, Rohini, and Vasudev could not find their sons, Krishna and Rama, they lost consciousness out of anguish. Tormented by separation from the Lord, his parents gave up their lives at that very spot. My dear Parikit, Sukadeva Goswami said, the wives of the Yadavas then climbed onto the funeral pyres, embracing their dead husbands. The wives of Lord Balaram also entered the fire and embraced his body, and Vasudeva's wives entered his fire and embraced his body. The daughters-in-law of Lord Hari entered the funeral fires of their respective husbands, headed by Prajumna, and Rukmini, and the other wives of Lord Krishna, whose hearts were completely absorbed in him, entered his fire. Arjuna felt great distress over separation from Lord Krishna, his dearmost friend, but he consoled himself by remembering the transcendental words that the Lord had sung to him. Arjuna saw to it that the funeral rites were properly carried out for the dead who had no remaining male family members. He executed the required ceremonies for each of the Yadus one after another. As soon as Dwarka was abandoned by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the ocean flooded it on all sides, sparing only his palaces. Lord Madhusudan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is eternally present in Dwarka. It is the most auspicious of all auspicious places, and merely remembering it destroys all contamination. Arjuna took the survivors of the Yadu dynasty, the women, children, and old men, to Indraprastha, where he installed Bhadra as ruler of the Yadus. Hearing from Arjuna of the death of their friends, my dear king, your grandfathers, that means Yudhisthira and the other Pandavas, established you, Parikit, as the maintainer of the dynasty and left to prepare for their own departure from this world. A person who with faith engages in chanting the glories of these various pastimes and incarnations of Vishnu, the Lord of Lords, will gain liberation from all sins. The all auspicious exploits of the all attractive incarnation of Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and also the pastimes he performed as a child are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures. Anyone who clearly chants these descriptions of his pastimes will attain transcendental loving service unto Lord Krishna, who is the goal of all perfect sages. So Krishna left, Arjuna took the residence, whatever, the queens, etc., and headed for Hastinapur. Meanwhile, in Hastinapur, Yudhisthira Maharaj had noticed certain things weren't right. And before Arjuna arrived, we heard in chapter 13 how Vidura he came to Prabhuchetra and he had seen that the Yadava dynasty and Krishna had departed. Then he met Uddhava and heard more about it. And then he pulled Dhritarashtra out because he knew that the age of Kali was going to begin. Then Narada came and said in chapter, he said to Yudhisthira, although he didn't tell Yudhisthira directly, neither Vidura nor Narada told Yudhisthira directly that the Yadu dynasty or Krishna had left, but Narada did say that the Pandavas may wait here as long as the Lord is on earth. So that was a hint. It was a hint by Narada that the Lord was winding up his pastimes, but actually he had already done so. So now we're picking up the story from the point of view of what was going on in Hastinapur. Krishna had left already. The Yadu dynasty had left and Yudhisthira was ruling the kingdom. He had ruled for 35 years. When Krishna left for Dwarka, 35 years passed of Yudhisthira's rule, and the kingdom was going so sweetly. There was nothing bad, practically speaking. Everything was so auspicious. Krishna was 90 at that time. Although he looked with his transcendental body as the sweetest of youths, of 16 or 20 or 20, something like that, he was 90. No gray hair, no wrinkles, no sagging jowls. Beautiful. Because, of course, Krishna's body is made out of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. No varicose veins, no hardened arteries. Krishna's body is eternal. So, chapter 14 begins. Arjuna went to Dwarka to see Lord Krishna and other friends, and also to learn from the Lord of his next activities, because Arjuna was there. But yet, Arjuna didn't return for some time. And Yudhisthira began to observe some inauspicious signs. He saw, now listen to these signs. These are the bad things that were going on. Practically speaking, when these things were going on, Yudhisthira could understand that these things could not be happening while Krishna was on this planet. So he concluded that Krishna, in his mind, in his heart, he intuitively feared and concluded that Krishna had left this planet. Now, it's so hard for us to understand, although we can get a glimpse from what we read, that when what it was like when Krishna left this planet. Vasudev, Devaki, etc., when they heard that Krishna had left, they died out of grief on the spot, practically speaking. Their hearts broken because their whole life was Krishna. We cannot imagine such love, but we should try to imagine such love because that is what we are missing. And again, this is drama in the sense that Krishna is eternal, the parents of Krishna are eternal. This is just pastimes of Krishna taking place. But Yudhisthira could not, when he saw these signs, he knew that this could not be happening while Krishna was on the planet. This is what he saw. He saw that the direction of eternal time had changed, and this was very fearful. There were disruptions in the seasonal regularities. The people in general had become greedy, angry, and deceitful. And he saw that they were adopting foul means of livelihood. This means that during Yudhisthira's reign, none of these things existed. People were satisfied. Prabhupada explains in the purport that these things are caused by ignorance, the deceit, the greed, the anger, that everyone feels so deeply within them, the madness, the confusion. These are all caused by ignorance. And when Krishna left, Dharma Gyana Devisaha, he took with him all knowledge, all religiousness. So now we are wallowing in these qualities. We don't know anything but these qualities. We identify with these qualities. Lust, anger, greed, illusion, etc. We think we are these qualities. And Prabhupada explains in his purport that these are caused by ignorance, and this ignorance in Kali Yuga can be removed. How? The powerful sun is there to distribute light in the shape of Srimad Bhagavatam. Here's more of the inauspicious omens. All ordinary transactions and dealings became polluted with cheating, even between friends. And in family affairs, there was always misunderstanding between fathers, mothers and sons, between well-wishers, between brothers, even between husband and wife, there was always strain and quarrel. In course of time, it came to pass that people in general became accustomed to greed, anger, pride. Maharaj Yudhisthira, observing all these omens, spoke to his younger brother, because he and the people were astonished to observe husbands and wives fighting, mothers and sons fighting, brothers fighting, people greedy, cheating, earning livelihood dishonestly? How is it possible? Maharaj Yudhisthira said to Bhimasena that I sent Arjuna to Dwarka to find out what was going on with Krishna, but several months have passed and I don't know what is going on. Is he going to quit? The Lord going to leave this world as Narada Muni had dedicated, has that time intimated? Has that time finally arrived? Now, in his purport to that text, which is text 8, Prabhupada gives much explanation about the different incarnations of Lord Krishna. And how Krishna himself, when Krishna himself comes, all the incarnations appear along with him. They enter into his form because he is the source of all the incarnations. Bhagavan Swayam. And then he even explains about the Varatarupa, the universal form of the Lord, and how that was left behind by Krishna in the material world. Because it's not his form, because his forms are spiritual, but yet because the universe is also an expansion of him, it is an aspect of him. So Prabhupada explains why Krishna left the universal form behind. We've already talked about this. Well, he himself went to his own dham, spiritual world. Yudhisthira continues. It was from him only, from Krishna only, that all our kingly opulences, our good wives, our lives, our progeny, our control over our subjects, our victory over our enemies, and future accommodations in the higher planets have become possible. All this is due to his causeless mercy upon us. I'd like to read something from Prabhupada's purport. Maharaj Yudhisthira admits this truth in his personal success, that it all comes by the grace of God. And it behooves one to follow in the footsteps of a great king and devotee of the Lord to make one's life a full success. Because everyone nowadays feels so unsuccessful. Even the people who are materially successful feel unsuccessful, even though they bluff. They have all the symbols of success. But they don't feel satisfied. No success. Because they miss how Yudhisthira got his success. There's different ways that one can become successful. By the mercy of God, if one becomes successful, then one's success is real. If one could achieve success without the sanction of the Lord, then no medical practitioner would fail to cure a patient. Despite the most advanced treatment of a suffering patient, by the most up-to-date medical practitioners, there is death, even in the most hopeless case. And even in the most hopeless case, without medical treatment, a patient is cured astonishingly. Therefore, the conclusion is that God's sanction is the immediate cause for all happenings, good or bad. Any successful man should feel grateful to the Lord for all that he has achieved, because everything ultimately depends on him. So Yudhisthira was not thinking, how is this happening? I am so powerful. I will stop it immediately. How are bad things happening? No, he's thinking everything good that has happened to me, any power I have is simply coming from Krishna. He continues speaking to Bhima. Just see, O man with a tiger's strength, how many miseries due to the celestial influences, earthly reactions, and bodily pains, all very dangerous in themselves, are foreboding danger in the near future by deluding our intelligence. More signs of inauspiciousness coming. The left side of my body, my thighs, arms, and eyes are all quivering again and again. I'm having heart palpitation due to fear. All this indicates undesirable happenings. Just see, O Bhima, how the she-jackal cries at the rising sun and vomits fire, and how the dog barks at me fearlessly. Inauspicious. O Bhimasena, tiger amongst men, now useful animals like cows are passing me on my left side, and lower animals like the asses are circumambulating me. My horses appear to weep upon seeing me. Just see, this pigeon is like the messenger of death. The shrieks of the owls and their rival crows makes my heart tremble. It appears that they want to make a void of the whole universe. Just see how the smoke encircles the sky. It appears that the earth and mountains are throbbing. Just hear the cloudless thunder and the bolts of lightning from the blue. The wind blows violently, blasting dust everywhere and creating darkness. Clouds are raining everywhere with bloody disasters. The rays of the sun are declining, and the stars appear to be fighting amongst themselves. Confused living entities appear to be ablaze and weeping. Rivers, tributaries, ponds, reservoirs, and the mind are all perturbed. Butter no longer ignites fire. What is this extraordinary time? What is going to happen?
The calves do not suck the teats of the cows, nor do the cows give milk. They're standing, crying, tears in their eyes. And the bulls no longer take pleasure in the pasturing ground. The deities in the temple seem to be crying, lamenting, and perspiring. They seem about to leave. All the cities, villages, towns, gardens, mines, and hermitages are now devoid of beauty and bereft of happiness. I do not know what sort of calamities are now awaiting us. I think that all these earthly disturbances indicate some great loss to the good fortune of the world. The world was fortunate. What was the cause of the fortune to the world that he is thinking has been lost? What has made the world fortunate? The world was fortunate to have been marked with the footprints of the lotus feet of the Lord. These signs indicate that this will no longer be. He was fearing, intuiting that the Lord had departed. So Sutta Goswami, who is narrating this, says, observing these inauspicious signs on the earth at that time and thinking to himself, just then Arjuna arrived back from the city of Dwarka. When Arjuna bowed at Yudhisthira Maharaj's feet, the king looked at his face and saw, because immediately before he would say anything, he wanted to get some indication whether his fear was justified or not. And the face indicates the mind. So he looked at Arjuna's face and he saw complete dejection. Arjuna, the warrior, the undefeatable warrior, his face was down and tears were gliding from his lotus eyes. He was pale due to anxiety. Yudhisthira, fearing the indications of Narada, began to question him. He wouldn't immediately say, well, Krishna, has he died? Has he left? Has he left this world? No. He started from the outside and began to ask about the members of the Yadu dynasty. My dear brother Arjuna, please tell me whether our friends and relatives, such as Madhu Bhoja Dasaha, immediately asking about the outer members of the dynasty and the members of the Yadu family, are they passing their days in happiness? Is my respectable grandfather Surasena in a happy mood? And are my maternal uncle Vasudev and his younger brothers all doing well? His seven wives, headed by Devaki, Vasudev's wives, they're all sisters. Are they and their sons and their daughters-in-laws all happy? Or Ugrasena, whose son was the mischievous Kamsa, and his younger brothers still living? Are Ridika and Kritavarma happy? Are Akura, Jayanta, Gada, Saran, and Satujit all happy? There's a bit of the purport there I'd like to read, but I'll read that in a few moments. How is Pradyumna, the great general of the Vrishni family? Is he happy? Arjuna, are these people happy? Yudhisthira knew already. And is Aniruddha, the plenary expansion of the personality of Godhead, faring well? Are all the chieftain sons of Lord Krishna, such as Susena, Charadasna, Samba, the son of Jambavati, and Rishabh along with their sons, are they doing well? Also Shutadev, Uddhava, and others, these are all eternally liberated souls who are residents of Dwarka. Nanda, Sunanda, and other leaders of liberated souls who are constant companions of the Lord, they are protected by Lord Balaram, they are protected by Lord Krishna. Are they all doing well in their respective functions? Do they, who are all eternally bound in friendship with us, remember our welfare? These personalities are always and only protected by Krishna. Prabhupada explains this in the purport, that this is the living entity's position. We are meant to be fully taking shelter of Krishna's protection. And then if we do that, gotripte varanam tata, practically speaking, we will be in the spiritual world. The next five verses, Srila Swami says, they all are about Govinda, the questions that Yudhisthira will ask. And they should be understood, he says, with the added sentence, is that Govinda well? So Yudhisthira continues to ask, is Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who gives pleasure to the cows, the senses, and the brahmanas, who is very affectionate towards his devotees? Is he enjoying the pious assembly at Dwarka Puri surrounded by friends? Is that Govinda well? Because it is Govinda, especially Krishna, who Yudhisthira is inquiring about. The original personality of Godhead, the enjoyer, and Balaram, the primeval Lord Ananta, are staying in the ocean of the Yadu dynasty for the welfare and protection and general progress of the entire universe. And the members of the Yadu dynasty, being protected by the arms of the Lord, are enjoying life like the residents of the spiritual sky. Even though, seemingly, superficially, they were on earth, because all these personalities were protected and living with Krishna and his entourage, they were fully protected, fully free from all fear, fully free from anything negative. And they were enjoying life as if they were on the heaven, the most highest of heavenly planets. In the spiritual world, simply by administering comforts at the lotus feet of the Lord, which is the most important of all services, the queens at Dwarka, headed by Satyabhauma, induced the Lord to conquer the demigods. Thus the queens enjoy things which were the prerogatives of the wives of the controllers of the thunderbolts. So the story is that Satyabhauma, one of the queens of Krishna, wanted a parijata flower, which is only available in the heavenly planet, and Krishna brought down an entire tree, and that caused Indradev to fight with Krishna, and of course Indra was defeated by Krishna. Just see the position of those who are close to Krishna. They enjoy the most amazing things. Is that Govinda well, who serves his devotees in this way, who gives them protection, such happiness, facilities? Is that Govinda well? The great heroes of the Yadu dynasty, being protected by the arms of Lord Sri Krishna, always remain fearless in every respect. And therefore their feet trample over the Sudama assembly house, which the best demigods deserve, but which was taken away from them. Is that Govinda well, who is protecting, who is giving the Yadu dynasty, who is protecting them, giving them the assembly house of the demigods? My brother Arjun, please tell me whether your health is all right. You appear to have lost your bodily luster. Is this due to others disrespecting and neglecting you because of your long stay at Dwarka? Has someone addressed you with unfriendly words or threatened you? Could you not give charity to one who asked, or could you not keep your promise to someone? You are always the protector of the deserving living beings, such as the brahmanas, the children, cows, women, and the diseased. You have no effulgence, you have no happiness, you have no luster. Have you not been able to give protection to those who have approached you for shelter, and therefore you have lost everything? Have you contacted a woman of impeachable character? Or have you not properly treated a deserving woman? Or have you been defeated on the way by someone who is inferior or equal to you? What has caused? He knows, but yet he is asking, what has caused the lack of luster and the depression that I see exhibited upon your face? Have you not taken care of old men and boys who deserve to dine with you? Have you left them and taken your meals alone? So in this way, we're getting a glimpse of what causes misery and depression to an honorable warrior, a king, not having done noble things causes great misery to such a noble person. Have you committed some unpardonable mistake which is considered to be abominable? Or could it be that you are feeling empty for all time because you might have lost your most intimate friend, Lord Krishna? Oh, my brother Arjuna, I can think of no other reason for your becoming so dejected. So Yudhisthira asks the heavy question directly right there. So tomorrow we'll go over much of the next chapter. I would like to read a few of Prabhupada's purports. The first one was to text 28 and text 29 where Yudhisthira Maharaj asked about Balaram. How is Balaram the personality of Godhead and the protector of the devotees? Sri Rama, or Balaram, is the protector of the devotees of the Lord. Baladeva acts as the spiritual master of all devotees. And by his causeless mercy, the fallen souls are delivered. Sri Baladeva appears as Sri Nityananda Prabhu during the advent of Lord Chaitanya. And the great Lord Nityananda Prabhu exhibited his causeless mercy by delivering a pair of extremely fallen souls, namely Jagai and Madhai. Therefore, it is particularly mentioned herein that Balaram is the protector of the devotees of the Lord. By his divine grace only, one can approach the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna, and thus Sri Balaram is the mercy incarnation of the Lord, manifest as the spiritual master, the savior of the pure devotees. And one other segment, maybe two others. This is Prabhupada's purport to text 34. In this particular verse, the Lord is described as Bhagawan, Govinda, Brahmanya, and Bhaktavatsal. He is Bhagawan Swayam, or the original personality of Godhead, full with all opulence, all power, all knowledge, all beauty, all fame, and all renunciation. No one is equal to or greater than him. He is Govinda because he is the pleasure of the cows and the senses. Those who have purified their senses by devotional service of the Lord can render service unto him. Real service and thereby derive transcendental pleasure out of such purified senses. Only the impure living being cannot derive any pleasure from the senses. But being illusioned by false pleasures of the senses, he becomes servant of the senses. Therefore, we need his protection for our own interest. And finally, Prabhupada's purport, the 38. A forgetful conditioned soul is fearful. What is he fearful of? Fearful of everything, losing something that we have, not getting something that we want. On every level, the conditioned soul is fearful. But a liberated soul is never fearful. Just as a small child, completely dependent on the mercy of his father, is never fearful of anyone.
Fearfulness is a sort of illusion for a living being when he is in slumber and forgetting his eternal relation with the Lord. Since the living being is never to die by his constitution, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, then what is the cause of fearfulness? A person may be fearful of a tiger in a dream, but another man who is awake by his side sees no tiger there. The tiger is a myth for both of them, namely the person dreaming and the person awake, because actually there is no tiger. But the man forgetful of his awakened life is fearful, where the man who has not forgotten his position is not at all fearful. Therefore, the members of the Yadu dynasty were fully awake in their service to the Lord, and therefore there was no tiger for them to be afraid of at any time. Even if there were a real tiger, the Lord was there to protect them. So these purports describe one of the main and most powerful reasons that we should develop our loving relationship with Krishna through the divine mercy representative of the Krishna, of spiritual master, who is carrying the internal energy, who is carrying the potency of his spiritual master, who is carrying ultimately the potency of Lord Balaram, Lord Nityananda Prabhu, of Srimati Radharani. This is the internal energy of Krishna. This is what devotional service is. And if one becomes connected with that service and awakens his relationship with Krishna, and is alive on that level, on the spiritual level, if one has life on the spiritual level and sees this world as it is, a continuously changing phantasmagoria, a dream in the sense that it is always changing, there is nothing truly to grasp onto in this world, but yet we are eternal and body that lasts beyond the death of the body, that is eternal. If we become awakened to that, become under the protection of Krishna in that way, then for such a person there is no fear, there is no anxiety, there is only bliss. As Krishna is all bliss, then we have that, because the connection to him is through eternal service, through service, through the internal energy. So the Bhagavatam again gives us the shelter. Even though Krishna has left the planet, the Bhagavatam arises like the sun and destroys the darkness of Kali Yuga. Those things that are so abominable in Kali Yuga, those are our life. We live amongst these things, even though we don't want to be part of them. We have been brought up in Kali Yuga. We are attacked by these things of Kali Yuga. We associate with these elements of Kali Yuga. So therefore we need the protection of Krishna. It is in our interest. Okay, thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, si Krishna si Arjuna ki jai, si Yudhisthira Maharaj ki jai, Yadu Dynasty ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. No, Hare Krishna. Soul awake to his relationship with Krishna. He's living in Krishna. The relationship is as intimate as the relationship between the soul and the body, in that sense. The relationship of the soul to the body is so powerful that we, when we think of ourselves, we think of this. So Krishna gives life to the soul. And when the consciousness of the soul is awake to Krishna, then he has real life. So let us try to get that real life. And we can just imagine these people, Yudhisthira Maharaj, Arjuna, it was like they died. There was no purpose to their life anymore. They were just moving a dead body around. That's what they felt like when Krishna left. This was the extent of their love. And in that separation from Krishna, feeling so deeply for Krishna, remembering him, thinking about him, thinking without Krishna, I am nothing, I am dead. Their love for Krishna was evoked still further, and they felt such transcendental ecstasy. Although from the external point of view, it appears that they were miserable. And they were miserable in a real sense, but in the most real sense, they were experiencing just varieties of ecstasy, of love, different emotions, various emotions of loving relationship with Krishna. So this is all very mysterious for a conditioned soul whose eyes are glued closed by the powerful super glue of Maya. What we should hear, try to understand, and try to, that will open our eyes. Okay, thank you. Srimad Bhagavatam.